Hi, this is Bonnie Gillespie, and you're tuned in to The Work.
All right, everybody, it's Quincy Cho. Yay! Welcome. Big long yay from Quincy. I'm so glad you're joining me and all of us for this episode of The Work. I really appreciate it. Let's dive in and start off with a little of your backstory. How did you first get into self-management for actors of it all? How'd that come into your world? And then we'll go a little farther back from that to your creative spark and all that.
Okay. Gotcha. I actually had heard about you and your work in 2013 while I was taking an improv class. And I was just kind of looking for more career focused. And the girl in my improv class was like, have you heard of Bonnie Gillespie? She has a free blog online that you can follow and you should read it. And so I read it, but because of the year long before that of like all the, you know, negativity I consumed, I was like, this isn't real. This is too positive. And so I stalked you for about like a good year, taking a few modules here and there and reading every single one of the newsletters that you published from when I signed up till I met you. And finally, I came to a point where I was like, you know what, let me take this foundations class. Cause you had, it was like, I missed like the August one and then you offered it again. And I was like, oh my God, I need to sign up now. Signed up, took your class in 2014. And so it's been a little bit over 2 years and I've been loving every single second of it. And it feels longer too. It doesn't feel like two
totally.
Years.
Yeah. Just to me too. I feel like we've forever been together.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Back before that, it's interesting because you mentioned there had been significant negativity that you were exposed to before you started consuming some of the self-management for actors stuff. Take us from the beginning. What was your creative spark of knowing you wanted to pursue a creative career, and what kind of got you into a little bit of a ditch there with some of the more negative stuff that's out there?
Okay. So to answer your first question about how my creative journey started, it started in high school when I saw our high school production of Peter Pan. And the funny thing was the lead actor who's playing Peter Pan was not a very good Peter Pan in the sense that he was very like masculine and hairy, which is like not Peter Pan, but he was fantastic. And I remember watching and like the energy that was coming off stage and the shared energy that the audience and the actors were sharing. I was like, wow, what is this? And it made me feel really alive. And so I went to school secretly. I was a pre-med bio major and then and got a secret theater degree, dropped the pre-med and bio major because it sucked. And kept with theater, and I just loved the collaborative aspect of theater, and I loved how much it challenges me, and it still continues to challenge me, acting does. And then in terms of the negativity, I was out here doing improv, and improv was great. I still do improv to this day. It's such a huge gift. But like some of the people I had met just weren't really like supportive, and I was feeling like, you know, even when I was getting breakdowns, it was so overwhelming. I was like, oh, I guess I could play a 32-year-old businesswoman. I can do business, right? But that didn't feel right. You know, there was no way I should be submitting for every single female role that was coming out. And so I was looking for guidance. And in terms of the negativity, I don't think I had quite found my community yet. And so a lot of the people that I was running into were either not very supportive, or it felt like there was like a sneaky backhandedness to some of the stuff that they would say to me. You know, it just never really clicked inside. And so when I found SMFA, like as skeptical as I was in the beginning, I'm such a believer.
You know, that skepticism is not something unique to you, Quincy, because I'll never forget there was a ninja who took our classes and she said that, you know, her long-term boyfriend is a showrunner. And she said she came home from one of the exercises with all this feedback from everybody, you know, and she was so excited. And of course we go out after class. And so she's like, chatter, 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 chatter. Can't wait to share. And he's like, this is bullshit. There's no way that these people who are competing with you for roles could have possibly been this helpful and this supportive. Like what's the catch? And she came to me and told me that. And I said, I'm really glad to hear that there's that perception. And I don't need you to set anybody straight. You feel in your gut when someone is being helpful, agendaless, or with the agenda being, I just want you to get more work because your job is not my job. And I think that may be the big difference between what you experienced before and then after, because there's, once you know it's either my job or it's your job, there's no competition. There's nothing but collaboration. And to go back to your improv roots, there's nothing but yes and. There's nothing but help your scene partner look better.
Yeah. And it makes doing like self-producing and all that stuff, it opens it up, because it doesn't become a competition anymore. It's about helping each other get to the next level versus being so competitive. And even with the showcase, I was in it with my dear friend Donzel, and it was so good doing it by myself would have been fine, but to have somebody to touch base with and where you can honestly dish out everything and you're not being judged, it's such a rare thing to find. And if you can find that, like, double down on it. Why reject a good thing? You know, like, why live in negativity when you can come to the other side and be with people who are supporting you and cheering you on, versus like a bunch of like negative Nancys who are like grumbling at your success?
Well, because have fun along the way. Ultimately, what does it matter where we get if we are miserable on the journey of it? And I think that really is a lot of what this is. Can we talk a little bit about improv specifically?
Yeah.
And the kind of work that you do, and tell me about your process with, because everybody, especially in LA, gets into that whole, is it IO, is it Groundlings, is it UCB, is it, you know, where do I go, and do I have to choose a home base, and could it be something that's a little more underground? How did you find your improv speed?
I found, I had taken a level one IO class actually the junior year of my college, because I'd gotten a college grant to study improv because I was working on a one woman show. And so when I came back to LA after I'd graduated from college, I reached out to my level one teacher, Dave Hill. He's on King 10, amazing coach, just awesome energy. And he recommended, a TV audition teacher, but was like, why not come back and do improv anyways? Because, you know, and I had asked him what should be my first step. And a lot of people told me commercials. Commercial agents are the easiest to target, so start with improv. And so it started off as like a resume booster, but it ended up becoming this like thing I do regularly. And I would say, you know, right now UCB is like the big place to be right now, but I would say go with where you want to start. Like, don't go for the name, go with where you feel like this is where I can be comfortable and play creatively. Because at the end of the day, by the time you go through all the programs, you're going to want to learn from other programs.
Yeah.
Like, it's only at the start of the journey where you're like, I'm only going to study from this school. But what you realize is as you continue, other schools offer other like things that other schools don't offer. And one of my teachers, Heather Ann Campbell, she's amazing, was saying this, the years that you put in at one school, it doesn't go away just because you leave or if that school shuts down.
Totally.
So it's about amassing as much tools in your tool belt versus sticking to one school, because what Groundling has to offer versus UCB and IO, they're all little gems and you can't go wrong. Just start with where it feels right for you and keep playing and keep exploring. There's no right way.
So Quincy, do you find what's right for you by auditing or attending shows or getting to know people who are performing at different companies or training different places? Or do you sign up and like plunk down the cash and commit to a long-term class and then pick up and go somewhere else? Because the reason I'm asking this specifically is because a lot of people suffer from, I just have to try every class itis. And they feel like they're never going to advance through because they do the beginner level of everything. And after a while, that can get very expensive and also probably frustrating. I'm wondering what your process is.
For auditing, okay, a couple of things. First off, if you finished a program completely through at one of the bigs, typically they'll let you skip the level one class and let you hop into a level two. You just have to ask them. Secondly, I would say, yes, go watch shows. I don't know if every school lets you audit, but if you can, definitely audit, because the shows are different and the vibe of each show and the venues of each show is different. And so you want to check that out. Absolutely. And in terms of going through the program, I would say like, and I know most of the schools have like a level program where you go through and you have to pass. At the start of my improv journey, I was like in such a rush to get through the program and get on a main stage team and da 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 da. And it takes it's a long time before you can get comfortable to just go out. Literally, you get all this training to go out and have fun on stage. And so take your time. Like, it's not a race. If you need to repeat a level, that's totally okay. If level 2 or 3 is good for you and it turns out it doesn't work out for you, then move on and find a different school. It's not, you're not a failure because you didn't finish. Or, you know, sometimes if you take a break and you want to do a lap at other schools and come back, do so. It's totally fine. And and I know like some people would say it sucks because like sometimes you graduate with the same class and you know, you miss out, but then just take the lap for yourself and you'll meet new people who are coming up with you. So don't worry about the end goal of it, because part of improv too is it's so humbling and it's so hard because you're trying to be funny. And sometimes you're in class and it's just like, you're trying your best and nothing. It's like dead silence. And it's a different kind of struggle. And you want to be gentle with yourself with that. You don't want to beat yourself up because it takes time. Like it'll take time and you'll eventually get it, but don't worry about the end result, like being the best improviser.
I love that, Quincy. Thank you. You said a phrase that is sticking in my mind. It was that not finishing doesn't mean failing. And I have just this flash of your secret theater degree, I think you called it.
Yeah.
And you were working, you said pre-med, right?
Uh-huh.
How did you feel giving that up, not finishing what you started with that road? Do you ever have pangs of, I can always come back to it? Or is it like, oh, no, okay.
No. I probably, knowing me, would have stuck it through if we didn't have to do any sort of labs, just because of like who I am and how determined I am. But it was second semester. I had chem lab and I also had broken my wrist that semester. I had chem lab from 5 to 7, 5 to 8. And I'd come out at 7:30. It's Boston winter. And it was just miserable. And I'd smell like chemicals. You'd work alone and I can like cook, but for some reason I couldn't, even if I followed directions in the chem book, I got my lab results wrong every single time. It was frustrating. And I realized walking through and I'd go get dinner and by that time dinner wasn't even served anymore. I was like, you know, this sucks. This really sucks. And I don't want to be doing this anymore. And so I don't regret that because I knew, like, it's kind of like when you're trying to force like a small shoe onto your foot. It's like, why would you do that? It just was such a not good fit. And now that I know who and what I am, I realized I would have been like a terrible doctor. Like every day would have been like, I would have been a crying mess. Like every day I would have been like, well, why am I here?
No.
You know?
Oh, that's great. You mentioned self-producing. Yes. A little bit earlier. Talk to me about that. What kinds of things have you worked on personally or that are you working on now? And this is, if there's anything that you want to promote or talk about that you're excited about, I want to hear.
Yes. Self-producing. I started doing that last year with your advice. And that was really great because we just did it. We launched, like you said, at 85%. And we would shoot. So we had like a weekend shoot every month. And we finished season one and we're taking a break. But for season two, my writing partner and I want to do a longer writing period before producing. But we also look back and we realize that the way we did it in the beginning was the right way to do it because there was no way, like now we know what the characters are, but it took writing and producing for us to figure it out. And there was no way we would have really been able to figure out what these characters were about, just like being in a writing room and trying to like map it out. And that was really great because once you start writing and shooting your own things, you realize, oh, I can go write something. Like if you ever see something you don't like, or you're like, I have an idea, you can go write it. I recently did 2 sketches earlier this year without me in it. I usually star in my own stuff, but I just wrote two one-off sketches and really enjoyed doing that. And it was nice just to be on the producing writing end of it instead of producing writing and acting, which is like so many things to juggle. And right now I am in the process of developing another, like, I guess, serialized episodic thing with Ann Woods. I love Ann Woods. Ann Woods, if you hear this, I love you. And new media series called The Adventures of Nerf Girls, and we're really excited about that.
Cute. What, can you speak a little bit about the concept, or is it still too new?
I don't think Anne would mind if I shared. It's pretty much two girls, we're like best friends, and pretty much the characters are these just like fun-loving girls who go and fight crime with like Nerf guns, and they have like clear backpacks from the 90s, and like they're just colorful little girls, and they go around solving crime in the city.
So little Hardy Boys, but girls and little 90s kids. That's adorable.
Yes.
I love all of this. And you're perfect to do this together. That's great.
Yes.
And now let's talk about the collaborative process, because when you talked about creating your own content, you do speak about it as a part of a team. What is that give and take like? And what sort of rules do you set up at the beginning to have a successful venture?
I would say in terms of starting, find someone you gel with, find someone you creatively connect with, either humor or something. Even with Anne just pitched me an idea and I just love her so much. I was like, yes to everything. I don't care. Let's just do something together. And I'm really excited to work with her on that. And with Eileen, my writing partner for my new media series, Time Out with Eileen and Quincy, I approached her about it just because I felt like we were on the same career trajectory, and that we would be taking it seriously and giving it the care and attention that it needed. So in terms of that, finding someone that you gel with, I think is really important. And then secondly, in terms of communicating, I think it's just knowing, you know, we all have that feeling of like give and take, you know, when you're pushing and you know when you're not sticking up for yourself. And it's just checking in with that and checking in with your partner and being like, hey, what's going on here? And just being honest with it, with each other up front from the beginning.
So outside of the content creation world, what sort of things are going on in your acting career or in your personal career, let's say outside of acting, the support business that you've created? Do you want to talk about that at all?
Yes, I would love to.
I think it's really exciting.
I would love to. So I've always been a writer. I was also an English lit major before I dropped that. And because I was just having too much fun doing theater and costume makeup design and stuff like that. I recently launched my website, but it's been ongoing for about a year and a half. And it's called Rainbow Brain Writing. And I'm a freelance copywriter. That's my thrival job. And I specialize in creating content for creatives and creative businesses.
Nice. Now, what does that entail for someone who's never hired a copywriter, but who knows, like, oh, I suck at writing, say, if that's their self-talk?
Yes.
Where does this all start?
Primarily, my strength lies in web content. So if you have, for example, if you're an actor and you need a bio or a cover letter written, I'm your gal. I look at your branding. I figure out, you know, what's the best way to present your brand in a bio or cover letter to an agent. And, you know, we start with the consultation and we go from there. I realized there was a niche for this because a lot of the bios I was reading with actor friends of mine weren't saying much. It was either a regurgitation of their resume, which, you know, casting can just look up on their IMDb or their Actors Access, or it was just like a history of where they were, but not where they were going. And I wasn't getting any of their flavor, their personality, or even their castability. And so I made myself available for actors who are looking for a branded bio that tells their story.
That's really well stated. Why do you think it is that actors' bios generally suck? I mean, frankly.
Yeah. I think some of it comes from not, like, I think part of it is, like, sharing that typical, like, grew up in New York or whatever, fell in love with acting, saw Pretty Lights. I think that it's, that's all you see. So I think people accept that as the general like template for what a bio looks like. But also I think people have a hard time. One thing is I think people have a hard time showing where they're going. And I personally struggled with that with my own bio. It was a regurgitation of like where I had grown up. And, you know, unless that's relevant to your brand as an actor, it's really, it's not doing you any good. And I think it's hard for people to tell the story of their brand because either it's too much and they don't want to stand out in some ways, or it's, you know, technically they can't do it, or they're not allowing themselves to express themselves in the bio.
So often people get into acting because they want to try on all the different people they can be, and talking about themselves feels like torture.
Yeah.
Wait, could you describe a little bit about your consulting process when you do that intake conversation with someone to see if it's a good fit? Like, what do you get them talking about themselves, or how does that go?
So my consultations with my clients start with a schedule. So I get you on the books. And once we do that, we have a Skype interview where we talk about your brand. If I don't know you already, I get to know a little bit about you, your personality, and what your brand story is about. From there, within the scheduler, you have the opportunity to also submit your previous material so we can go over what's working or what isn't working. And for, I know some of my clients feel very hesitant to share their materials with me, but because, you know, I think they feel like they may be getting judged, but it's not at all. Sometimes I've noticed within their own writing, they have shared something about themselves, but it's hidden in it. And I want to show them you have it already. You just need to tease it out a little bit. Or there's a tone of honesty in their writing that I would never be able to emulate because if that writing came from them. And so we look at that and we talk about what isn't working, what is working. And then from there, in the scheduler, I include like a little share a few fun facts about yourself, and we'll go over that. And so I'll ask them a few questions to kind of dig deep and like tease out those details. But for most people with their brands, I think for those of you who are listening, who are trying to write your own bios, one tip I would like to share is you already have the details of your brand living inside of you. It's just mining them and treating them like gold. And it's those details and how you tweak them that makes your brand pop.
So this is awesome. I love all of this. Remind people how to reach out to you if they want to explore more tips from you or have that one-on-one session with you. Where do they go?
Yes, you can find me at rainbowbrain.me. RAINBOW brain.me or Quincy at rainbowbrain.me. And just shoot me an email. I'm available. Any questions, even if it's just like, hey, will you take a look at this? We can set something up.
That's fantastic. Awesome.
Yep.
And then for other acting stuff, what's going on? What are you excited about?
I am excited I just recently got cast with for a new development play with my old theater company Here Now Theater, and we are developing a new, I don't even know what it is. They were just like, please be in it, and I was like, okay. And mostly the reason I said yes without knowing the project details is because I met one of my good dear friends through a project like this where it was just like, all right, I'll do it. And so now with projects, and because of my old theater company, I love them. It's Here Now Theater. And so it's good people. And I'm like, okay, it's letting me be creative this summer. And so I will be performing in August, the second week of August. Where is it? The 19th, 20th, and the 21st. And if you want to see me playing some improv, I will be playing at the UCB Franklin, I believe at 7 o'clock, with my improv team, my mess hall team, Greenlight Go. Or you can catch me with my home indie team, Yellow Fever, on July 10th at 7:30 at the Clubhouse, which is an indie venue. Both shows will be really fun. Yes.
Woo! Now, so let's talk about that real quick before we wrap up, that you are passionate about stage and staying on stage and staying active in a town, LA, where a lot of people poo-poo being on stage and will say, no, 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 you just need to focus on camera and commercials and do workshops, and it's all about the on-camera stuff. What is it that feeds you about constantly being out there and on stage and saying yes?
Oh, I love being on stage. It's just so fun to be on stage and performing in front of a live audience. It's a different kind of joy. And I feel like for me, it's anything that's going on in my acting life directly affects like who I am personally. And I feel like the more comfortable I get on stage, the more comfortable I become as a person and vice versa. And I mean, with shows too, it's just fun to do shows like improv all the time because it gives you something to do. You're meeting people, you're getting your name out there, and it's an easy way to meet people and stay connected in a community, especially because I think with film, it's hard to be meeting people unless you're in class or on a project. Whereas with improv and doing this kind of community stage work, you're in front of people, and after a show, you can. And even if you just go watch a show, you can come up to a person and be like, oh my gosh, hey, I love what you did there. How did you do that? Or how did you come up with that idea? And people are available for you to talk to them immediately.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. I like that. It's good. You ready to do some brand prov?
Yes.
Ooh, always. Okay, great. Okay, if you've got theme music playing as you walk through life, what is it?
Ooh, this is very specific, but the Nerdist podcast has an intro song that they play when they launch into the interview, and that would be my theme song. Ooh. I heard it and I was like, oh my god, this is so amazing. Like, it just makes you so happy and it takes you on like a video game adventure.
And if you were a video game character, who would you be?
Ooh, this is a good one. I feel like if I was a video game character, I would be Quincy Dinosaur. I'd be my own video game character.
And what sort of special powers does Quincy Dinosaur have?
I would be able to eat a lot of donuts, and I feel like shoot lightning bolts and like fly.
Okay, and then I have to
and ride a cloud. Definitely ride a cloud. I'd be able to ride a cloud.
I have to ask, why Quincy Dinosaur? What does it mean for?
I think it's just like my fierceness, my playfulness, my inner Pokemon-ness. I think it's the my intensity and my creativity and my quirkiness all rolled up into one.
Awesome. And let's see, when you are asked about politics, where do you go?
In terms of
what do you get political about?
I get political.
Or do you? Because some don't.
I do. There was a time a few years ago when I was hesitant to post about political activism stuff or social issues. But I think with how things have been, it's just gotten to a point where I feel like, you know, I need to be voicing that. And I think, you know, and even developing where you stand starts with voicing that. And so that became really important to me. And so I'm big on LGBTQ issues and women's rights issues, just because look at me.
And then finally, your alma mater calls you and says, we want you to come give a talk. You get to do the commencement address, or you're asked to do a TED talk. What's your topic?
Ooh, this is a good one. What is my topic? I think for me, I realized recently, I don't know if it's like a mid-20s thing or just me finally accepting and growing into it. I spent most of high school and college really like unhappy. And it's only been recently, I feel like, that I've been experiencing this incredible joy and confidence and love and support, and also choosing to be with people who give back that kind of energy, that radiate that kind of energy. So I think it would be something along the lines of finding your joy, surrounding yourself with good people, finding your home base, and what that journey is like. Because I remember when I used to be like, oh my god, I'm so depressed, people would be like, be confident, and you're like, what, no, what, you know. And I think about that a lot, about that shift. So I would want to talk about what that shift is like and how you can go about finding that. And it's not this just easy statement of like, go be confident, find your dreams. You know, it's a process.
I love this. And it takes me to, there's actually a chapter in the new book that I'm writing, the Have Fun, Don't Suck book, which of course you know all about.
Yes.
The chapter is called Cast Your Life. And it's about how we have the choice of who we co-star with and whom we let stay outside in the waiting room and who never gets to even learn that there's an opportunity to get an audition to be in our lives. And I think those choices are, I think, a part of growing through your 20s, as you mentioned. I absolutely. And I am so thrilled to know that that's something that resonates with what you would take back to your alma mater or do with your TED Talk.
Yeah, it's hard because I think there's a lot of pressure to do those things or like ignore your gut. And it's like, I feel like the recurring thing I keep learning is, you know, you have to go with your gut and screw whatever anyone else says. It's, you know, it's such a cliche, but it is your life. And why would you want to live it any other way? By the way, I'm so excited for your book, and I hope you are doing an Audible version of the book. Are you allowed to share that yet?
We will do an audiobook version. Whether or not it goes up on Audible remains to be seen. Their pricing structure is not very publisher friendly. Or at least it wasn't when we checked it out for Self-Management for Actors. So the way that, because we have an international distributor for the physical books, we have to negotiate exactly how we want the audio to play out. And it, you know, it comes down to, do I want to get 2 cents for a book or do I want to have, you know, anyway, blah, blah, blah. So yes, but not exactly sure in what format.
I just want to know, because I feel like especially your recent work episodes, the more recent ones, not these ones, I'm just like, oh my God, Bonnie has an amazing reading voice. Like I could to you read all day. And I'm like, I hope your new book comes with an audio version that I can
most
listen
definitely.
To.
Yeah, absolutely. You will never shut me up.
Yay!
So Quincy, as we wrap things up, would you please tell everybody where they can go to find all things you, where you are on social media? I know we already talked about the rainbowbrain.me, I believe, for the website for your copywriting services. If people want to connect with you, are you open on social? Like, where should people connect?
Yes, I'm Quincy Dinosaur on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And feel free to reach out to me there and connect with me. I'd love to hear from you. And to follow my acting stuff, look up quincychow.com.
You're fantastic, Quincy Dinosaur.
Thank you.
All right, my friends, this has been Bonnie Gillespie for another episode of The Work. Thank you so much for joining me here. Please join me over at BonnieGillespie.com for all sorts of goodness between episodes. And until next time, stay ninja.